Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Managing Director of Elkett Global.
And delighted to have with us today Christoph Hausler, who is the Chief Manufacturing Officer of Refresco Group. So just a bit of introduction for Refresco. It's the world's largest independent bottler for retailers and A-brands in Europe, North America. I do believe also Mexico is a very large market for you guys. 79 manufacturing sites and growing, very impressive footprint. Christoph spent all of his life across different parts of supply chain, I guess, a long career also with Procter & Gamble and with Reckitt, and now exciting times. Looking forward to a great sharing session. Christoph, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks. Thanks for having me. Maybe just one add. Don't forget Australia, so three continents, and we appraise ourselves as not just being a bottler only, we're a beverage solution provider. So whatever you want to fill in a consumer-friendly packaging, and if you pay well, and if you pay on time, we are the first go-to.
Love it. So Christoph, maybe let's start with yourself first. Yep. And tell us a little bit, how did you end up in supply chain? Perhaps that's a good story as well. And what were some of the inflection points when you look back, one or two moments in your career which really made a difference for you?
I think actually the first one started for me way before I had my first full-time job. I decided during my time at university to pursue my passionate interest in sports. And I was in a team sport, handball, which is very popular in the north of Europe, not really very much known in all the other places. It's basically indoor. You play seven against seven. The rules are everything is allowed unless the referee is stopping you. And just this sheer magic of when the team is fitting well and the team is coming first, not the individual, that very often you experience that a team of individuals, which is supposed to be stronger, supposed to be better, is not winning. And that joy. And secondly, the joy when you're in a team where your peers are in certain parts better than you and they're making yourself better. That is something which I take a lot of energy out. And when I did my first intern in a large, very, very big FMCG company, European based, I enjoyed the connect with marketing, this constant change, this constant innovation, and this constant need from the supply chain to respond. And that was the first big one that I said, I want to work in FMCG if I call the first one.
And when you look, so you've done, you know, you've done different roles. Now you're head of manufacturing, but you've done also different aspects of supply chain and end-to-end supply chain. What were some of, and probably 25, what, 30 years now? When you look back, what were some of the moments, perhaps a factory floor or a DC center or, I don't know, an aha moment, you know, your Eureka moments, I guess, in your career that made you and shaped you on who you are today?
So I was very fortunate, hindsight, of having joined beverages in Procter & Gamble in 1995. Why fortunate? So first of all, Procter & Gamble is, of course, a very reputable company. But beverages was a non-strategic business in Procter & Gamble because the margins at that time and the rest of the portfolio were significantly more attractive. So they've had the best of both worlds. I basically had all the training, all the access to all these talents and the wisdom of the company, but equally also the space, limited funds, and therefore I had significant opportunities. That was one. And the second one for sure was career opportunities there were significantly faster than anywhere else because of obviously a very lean structure. And I remember well, my first team I had were a team of 27 people, and you had to learn as of day one that you have to make decisions. And when you make decisions, then it's okay to make mistakes. But when you don't make decisions, you better don't deliver mistakes. And learning that comfort, because obviously you're young, you know less than some of what the decisions are requiring, is giving you uncomfort. And learning how to grow with this discomfort is for sure something which has biased and supported me a lot in my career.
So bringing it to today, yeah, significant 79 factories, yeah, for Refresco, global footprint, three continents. Let's start first with what would be one or two projects that you're most proud of in the period that you've been with the company, specifically in more recent past.
One thing I start with one which I'm very pleased with and one which I'm particularly proud. The pleased one is our strategy has not changed since more than a decade. My boss, the CEO, is building this company since more than a decade. So I joined a company where basically a CEO is there since, in F&G terms, more than five terms. So this is probably unheard of. And it's a very, very successful buy and build strategy. And we do a lot of acquisitions. And basically, being part of a very experienced team, which is building board papers you're delivering, is something which I'm exceptionally grateful for. Because we all know that the company is only as good as your next acquisition. So, you know, you can do nine good ones, but you mess up with one, you have an issue. The second one is something which is, it's a company which is growing very fast. There's a lot of pride in the company, deserved pride. And I feel that we are getting stronger and stronger in being aware of what we've delivered, but being also even more hungry of there's more we can go after. So really getting the defensiveness into a positive appetite. And I very much like these words of we are insecure overachievers. I like that a lot. That is something we used. Bankies are also quite a bit. I like that, which basically means is we're never happy in a positive way.
And when you look at a manufacturing footprint like yours with a lot of different factories, and again, the need to be in close proximity to your clients also to deliver those cost efficiencies, sustainability aspects is important. What are your main focus areas for the next 12 to 24 months? And also, what's the main challenges that you foresee you will have to get it?
So we are fantastic in a lot of things. We're not very, very good in titles, names, because we couldn't care less. So my responsibility in the leadership team is for operations. So anything in the FNCC world, you would call it end-to-end. But at the end of the day, it's about the cost, the service, the quality, the speed to market, and then a big focus area is ESG. So currently, the biggest focus areas for me is obviously establishing a structured global productivity program. As I said, where we are creating joy and the accountability to survive our margins, which is ahead of schedule. So we're doing exceptionally well. And there's a lot of joy seeing the money flowing into the P&L, because at the end of the day, that's what you want. You want that your shareholders are happy, that your shareholders are investing in you, and that you have space to thrive. The second one is an area which beverages, of course, is a business which requires a lot of focus in the area of ESG, which is particular when you think about water, when you think about water scarce areas, when you think about water efficiency, and think about our business. We work with everybody, and we compete with anybody, which basically means is our portfolio is constantly changing. Yes. So we run an average at least 140 SKUs on a line. And it might be in the morning red, it might be in the afternoon blue, it might be yellow, it might have other symbols on it. And therefore, not using this as an excuse of not driving for this is a focus area, because we want to be in that area, obviously, in a visible front runner. And that's something we are focusing very much on.
I was talking to a CEO a couple of months ago, and we were talking historically. They were extremely good at manufacturing and operations excellence. They would typically have a chief operations officer that came, and they still have actually, that came from a very strong manufacturing background. And he was kind of telling me that, look, that's all fine. And, you know, we're probably the most efficient and effective at producing, I'll not call the product, producing what we produce. Issue is that knowing when to produce it, knowing when to deliver it, knowing where to store it to minimize the logistics costs around it and the lead times, we're not there. So I wanted to ask you this linkage, this end-to-end linkage. There's a lot in most companies. I have to be fair. I mean, yes, we talk Procter & Gamble and whatnot, but nobody does it perfectly. Nobody. I mean, there's definitely certain companies that are very good at one, two of the aspects, but I haven't yet come across, and again, you've been more at it than I have, somebody that does it all flawlessly. So I wanted to ask, if you had that magic wand, right, inside Refresco, where or what is that link that would make the most difference throughout your end-to-end supply chain and that would improve the most your productivity or your efficiency?
So first of all, the good news for us is we're not perfect. And that's of course good news, because first of all, that's the justification that we are all going to work every day, and secondly, it gives of course a big value creation. High level speaking, I strongly believe that a good company ultimately is measured by what do the customers of that company think. A second, are you able to attract talents? And third, and that's the hardcore measurement, is your financial performance. If your strategy sounds great, but you're not able to keep or increase your market share, you're not able to keep and increase your margins, your strategy might be still fantastic, but you just suck, excuse my language, in execution. So these are the three which you need to focus on. And there's always something which you can improve. To the question of the magic stick, I don't believe that there's one magic one around globally. I think the most important thing always is that you have your key leaders, your key positions, I mean, from a department manager in a site and so on and so forth, that you have this ingrained thrive for accountability, a bit of a different word for entrepreneurship, yeah, that you really have this passion for owning something. And secondly, the constant injection of seeing the bigger picture in order the individual then can see how do I prioritize my own contribution? Because we all know it when we have worked in the factory. Sometimes basically we are pushing certain things which have a consequence in logistics. And maybe for the company, it would be better that the logistics area is pushing this, just to call out one example. And when you basically bring these people, these behaviors in the right swing, that basically there's an understanding of your accountability in this, and you have a passion for driving the bigger one, then I think your balance is out. And that's for Refresco. That's why we always ensure the decisions, like a price, like which customers to work with, they sit locally. So yes, there's not an ivory tower which is telling the country 3,000 miles away how to do it. So this sits locally. And my job is not to shine. My job is to do anything I can and everything I can with my team to support my commercial leaders that they win at any moment of time. That's my job. My job is not to shine. That's my job. And if I get this into the heart, the brains of everybody, it's really fun.
Love it. And I want to ask you, because this is quite a unique perspective, Refresco being a company that buys and continues to expand through a lot of acquisitions. So you've been there 2 years, 2 years and a half, yeah? So you've probably seen a few of these. So from the supply chain lens...
You're assuming correct.
From a supply chain lens, when you go and... Okay, you've acquired a new company.
Yeah.
What do you go and look at? What are some of the things that you prioritize first? And I'll give you a sharing, right? So I was talking to another chief supply chain officer. It wasn't in the context of an M&A. That's why it's quite interesting, your perspective. But he was saying just in general, he goes into a new company. He took over the position of COO. He went to see a factory. First thing he would go is to the DC, to the distribution center, and talk to the driver. Why? Because he would know that in the factory, they would have prepared everything from him, speak and span. He would not figure out anything. But if he spoke to the driver waiting to get the goods out of the warehouse, that guy will tell him, is it late? Is it how it was the lead time and so on. So I'm curious from your perspective, right? Where would you look from this M&A lens supply chain?
I think, first of all, it's very important that we take ourselves and operations not too serious, but equally also being aware that we have a significant contribution. I mean, an acquisition is always, at the end of the day, funded by the financial performance. And in a business like Refresco, it comes with which customers do you attract, which margins can you put in place, and how are you able and how effective to deliver against this in operations. So therefore, if from a financial point of view, a target is seen as fit, if the footprint, its customer base, its previous performance is seen as fit in a strategy, I, of course, look with no order and priority at what is the asset base, what do I see, what are similarities, where can I scale, what type of investments are required, are there any exposures, particular in beverages from an environmental point of view, and so on and so forth. And then a big portion for me is always to look at who are the people? What is the organization? Because we are growing so fast that we have a constant need to add talents. And if there's one thing which has excited me as of day one, this company has doubled at least every 5 years, at least. If you look into the numbers, you would probably say every 4 years. And the core of the cultural values have always stayed. I mean, how magic is this? And I'm also not aware of a single individual who wanted to grow or wanted to go to a different place and we couldn't have opportunities. So therefore, very important when you go into an acquisition, how much is the culture? How much is the difference? In my previous business experience, I've experienced once a completely different culture. And that is something which you then need to factor in your cost base, because that cannot be underestimated. I mean, running a pharma factory is a completely different mindset, rightfully so, than running, for instance, a corrugate plant. So you need to see where you're at, and then you need to build into your value model, because at the end of the day, when you sign the deal and the deal comes in, you need to deliver your numbers, because your current deal is only as good as the next deal. So you got to deliver.
So this actually reminds me. So I know two different companies. They are in the logistics space, though. So there's, but okay. I mean, I like to think bigger picture, and I don't believe that much that industries in itself, every industry that they think somehow they're super special. I might be ignorant, but I think at the principle level, yeah, of course there's differences in nuances and so on, but principles are principles. Yeah. So logistics companies, two different ways of acquiring. So one of them would acquire very successfully, basically remove ruthlessly the management of whoever they acquire. They've just done that historically for 20 years, and then it works. The other one would actually do a culture assessment. So the scales are different as well. But anyway, the other one would actually do a culture assessment of who they buy. And if the culture were too different, they wouldn't. Like, they would actually factor that in because they wanted to keep the people that they would buy. So I wanted to ask, how do you do it in Refresco? Because this culture thing is a very, well, it's intangible first. I mean, what's culture? I mean, it's not like you walk into the office and you see it. I mean, you can say that you sense it, but okay, it's a subjective thing. And you mentioned pharma, absolutely. But you have a lot of things. I mean, there's companies that are dictatorial. There's Australia culture versus Europe culture is not the same. I mean, there's a bunch of nuances, right? So how is there a way in which you do this more objectively, or how do you do it?
I mean, first of all, you've moved around in the world. You lived in different places. You speak constantly as part of your job and your passion with all kinds of people. And we experience every day that how limited are we as an individual. I had the fortune in living in three continents and multiple countries, half in emerging markets, half in more established markets. And every place has his magic. And when you experience this yourself, you basically get even more open for making sure that you bring as much as possible in there. So in Refresco, first and foremost, that was also one of the reasons for me joining. We really have a fantastic CEO who is embracing this. So yeah. At the end of the day, there are a lot of other things, but I mean, in the scope of our connect here, to be concise, at the end of the day, it's all about you got to deliver your numbers in the right value system. And if you deliver your numbers, you get all the support and all the space. And what I love about our company is it's about that. It's not about how you say it. It's about that you make sure that your troops are supported, engaged, inspired, and that you deliver your numbers. Mm. And every place is a bit different, and you're completely empowered. And it's lived by and led by the CEO. It's he knows every individual, and therefore, coming back to the origin, if you have that passion, if you want to be an entrepreneur, and you're basically leading a company which happened to, join us, well, the future is yours. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You mentioned talent and people quite a few times. Mm. When you hire, irrespective of role, yeah, I'm not talking hard skills. Are there certain soft skills that you look for? Are there certain, characteristic traits, values that you try to spot?
For me, I get intrigued always to see, is there humbleness? And this word is unfortunately heavily hyped over the last years, but I'm looking for some authenticity. Mm. And authenticity doesn't mean that I'm preparing myself and I'm thinking, who are you and how do I come across? So basically, who is this person? The individual treats. I'm looking also for self-awareness, because for me, one of the most important treats and needs for a leader to grow. That's what I'm looking at. And last but not least, also the ability to answer a question, to be concise. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at, because all the rest can be trained. And to bring this into an example, you can have this top rated graduate, super brain, super fast, super resilient, and you're looking for a talent which is going in the direction of leading teams. Well, if that person is not showing in that interview in any shape or form self-awareness of how do I come across in that team, not having the ability to adapt and to prioritize, there's a high likelihood that this is very disruptive. So therefore, that individual will not be for that career a pass at that point of time. So that's what I'm looking at. And then, of course, we all say this always, knowledge you can train, but its attitude is very, very, very important. And it's more and more difficult in these interviews to do because, I mean, we started in the beginning. When you read a CV today, when you see what the people are doing, if I look at my kids, how they articulate themselves, oh my goodness, I probably wouldn't get a job anymore if I would apply again as a first joiner. Yeah.
I'm with you. I mean, my daughter is in the sixth grade, and at the end of last year, so they just started a new year, but the end of last year, they had a start your own business competition. I mean, she's 10, 11. So they had a team of four. They created their website, business plan, and so on. I was like, I mean, when I was 10, yeah. Like, I never thought of such things.
Yeah. So, yeah. On the other hand side, also, I mean, if I look at, we have three kids and they were born in different countries. And other than myself, who basically was challenged in the beginning when I joined an international company to learn that basically you cannot communicate anymore in your native language, you constantly need to make sure that you can connect. That's for them very national. On the other hand side, when I see that with social media, being connected everywhere, being told or hearing what is right and what is wrong, I don't know. I feel that I had it in my time as a teenager easier because I was living in the here and now.
Now, three kids. So if you were to, and you may or may not do it, and they know what you do, so they may or may not want to take up a career in supply chain. But
why do you know?
I mean, I have kids as well. They couldn't care less of what I. But anyway, so what this time from a hard skills perspective or harder skills perspective, functional skills, right? What would you tell them? So if you wanted them to have a super successful career in the realm of supply chain, what would you tell them to study as of today?
So first of all, independent of supply chain, I really wish my kids and anybody that they are having the chance to do what they like. That's the biggest luxury you can have. I really wish that they can afford and can do what they like. And I will do anything I can together with my wife that we can support them, that they can do what they like. So I do not want them to go after a career. I want them to go after what they like. I would also tell them that you have to, and I've read this also with one of my dear peers. I think you talked this as well because I felt like, yeah, that's exactly what I would say as well. I would never suggest look for how a career look like. But that's how I think about it. You always need to look at what do you like now? Because life is short. And always be in the here and now. Do the best. Think, of course, a little bit about tomorrow, but do that. And then on supply chain, I'm personally, of course, as an engineer, believe that technical competence is very important. I think, yes, you can, with a strong background in economy, you can also, and great people skills, you can also be a great supply chain leader, but learning very scientifically and analytically how this is getting connected helps. And therefore, I think a combination of any type of engineering with international business is perfect. And if I look at my own experiences, I would also be very open for commercial experience. So for instance, I would have been very interested to go into the area of sales. I've been very late in my career exposed to account management. And when you're sitting in one of these big, big, big retailers who have a lot of market share and you feel this responsibility for your company and what to do, that's something which is changing your complete perspective. Because when you're sitting in a factory, of course, you think this is the epicenter of the company. And then you're realizing, well, you know, the big games are played somewhere else, and then you can connect it. So I would always go for a mix. But first and foremost, I would say do what you enjoy, because if you don't like what you study and you don't like your time at university, what are you doing with your life?
In fairness, I figured out what I want to do about 30. So I am also suspecting that we need a. It's highly overdue that we did some sort of educational revolution in our systems, and I think it's coming. But that's a discussion for a separate time. I'll just want to end asking you on this note that you mentioned that it, you know, having that commercial aspect as well. And I was sharing just the other day with a supply chain leader. We basically put together a book with McKinsey. Knut Alike is a partner in McKinsey sometime last year.
I heard about it. There were a few teases which you've shared. So, and I heard about it.
Yeah. So it's the intent was that let's get some of these stories out of people that have made it to the board, that have made it to CEO from supply chain, and let's hopefully inspire some other people. Now, my point and what I was sharing with this gentleman the other day, that still is fairly few that make it from supply chain to CEO. And his point was, he said, look, Rado, to me, it's not surprising. He was former chief procurement officer. To me, it's not surprising because we in supply chain, we don't learn to talk sales, commercial, business well enough or as well as the guys that are in sales and marketing do, right? They're almost used to. And he specifically told me, he's like, I sit in that meeting, you know, with the CEO and business leaders. The business leader come, look, I have this idea. I think we should try. Can I get a few millions to test it? The CEO says, yeah, sure, go ahead. Here, CPO goes, look, I have this. We can cut costs. Can I ask 2 million? No, you cannot. Okay. So then I wait a few quarters. Then I see the guy that asked for millions comes back and says, oh, it didn't work. The market shifted. And then the CEO goes, okay, never mind. You tried. Never mind. I'm like, what the hell? So then he says, well, I changed my pitch as well, Rado. I say, okay, look, I have this. I'm working on this business opportunity. Can I get some money, right? And then he got the money. So he was saying, like, it's the ability to properly communicate, influence, and talk business, don't talk supply chain, is key. So I just wanted to end to get also your perspective on this particular aspect.
No, I cannot agree more. And it's, of course, very challenging for us in operations. I always like to call it operations because I mean the entire supply chain. However, I would like to add two builds on this. Yes, completely agree. It's very important that you're customizing and you're being sharp in what is relevant for your leadership team. But I strongly believe it's not about that you are getting the buy-in only, because that would assume that you know it all. I think it's also about being still very open to connect the sharpness of your peers, because someone who is not part of your own hemisphere sometimes has an additional stint. I'll give you an example. Maintenance is, of course, an area of cost and pain for anybody in operations. And anybody in commercial roles will say the same, because I spend the money for something that I don't have an adverse event, but I don't know if I don't spend the money, do I have the adverse event? And highly controversial, and articulating this and then synchronizing this with each of those local leaders can be amazingly powerful. We should not ignore this, meaning it's not about being brilliant in getting the buy-in, it's equally also being open of any thought, of any strategic priorities which you are not considering. Because once again, our job is not to shine in the first place. Our job is to win with our commercial colleagues, with the customers. That's our job. And that sometimes, I think, we are a little bit short.
Yeah, I think the saying goes, don't be a know-it-all, be a learn-it-all.
Yeah, so I mean, it's similar to the area of digitization. Are you going for digitization for the sake of it? Well, intellectually, engineering-wise, I love it. I go the full nine yards. But in the end of the day, again, what is the purpose of your company? And it's always need to find the right mixer of, you know, being connected, being on top of things, being able to attract top talent. So you need to do certain things. But equally also, if you don't deliver your P&L, you can talk until the cows go home, but you will not have a lot of space. And managing this pragmatically, navigating between the short and the long, that's our job. And I find that fascinating. Yeah.
Love it. Christoph, been a delight. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for joining us today. And keep having fun and enjoying the work that you do in operations and manufacturing and supply chain.
Hey, Rado, thank you very much. And just in case, because you've changed also, of course, a lot of times in your career, if you happen to be interested in issuing a brand in beverages and you don't know whom to partner with, if you pay well, yeah, you know who to contact, okay?
And also, similarly, if you are looking to recruit, you know who to contact. We swap.
Absolutely, but what can I say? I have to talk to my manager.
Super. Christoph, pleasure. Hey, thanks for the time.
Thank you so much. Huh? Take care.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.